Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and while we were sorting out technical difficulties, I was working on another project. We're going to have a symposium on home education. A lot of people, you know, we started home educating almost 40 years ago, and we raised six children, and now we have grandchildren who are being home educated, and they're way past the kids in public education. But all homeschoolers do not get way past what the public school education kids are learning. Sometimes it's because of parental neglect. Sometimes it's because of rebellious children. Sometimes it's simply because people try curriculums that don't actually work very well. They try plans and education that are out there. A lot of people are selling curriculums, etc. And their curriculums are as narrow-minded as the public educational system. And so what works? What's the best? What should we do? Well, there's a lot of different opinions about that because, for one reason, there's a lot of different kids out there. And different children require different plans. One size does not fit all. And so therefore, we want to have a kind of symposium with men and women who have some experience in home education and put it together so that it will be fact-filled, based on real experience, and help people get a grasp of some of the basics in home education and how far it goes. I mean, I just recently heard about a couple of young kids, teenagers, who were actually got involved in politics and got involved in running campaigns and got very good at it and were in charge of running a fairly large campaign with lots of people working for them. And they were basically still children, still young teenagers. And they got somebody who was working the phones for them, and they were doing such a good job, they kept dumping more and more things on the individual. And I don't remember all the details, but eventually it come out that they were apologizing for dumping all the stuff on this girl. And she thought, no, it was great. I never would have had such an opportunity because I'm only 12 years old. And they were shocked. They thought that she was way older than that. And she's actually like 12 and 13 years old during this process. And she was doing an excellent job, as well or better than a lot of adults. And the gist of their book was basically that, you know, young people can do big things. I mean, it used to be young people were often married at 14 and 15 years of age, supporting a family, doing full-time work, working in mines, working in what have you. And now you're supposed to postpone your adulthood until you're 19, 20, 24, 25. Some of them are still postponing their adulthood at 30 and 40 years of age because they never grown up. They've never learned how to learn for themselves and apply themselves and run a business. And it's partly because they're institutionalized by public education. We've always heard of people who go to prison and they're in prison for 10 years or 20 years and finally they get out. And they go and commit a crime so that they can go right back in, because to be outside of prison is more frightening for them than being in prison. They have become institutionalized. They don't know how to cope outside of the parameters of prison. And the reality is people don't know how to cope outside of the parameters of the public school setting. Now, of course, some kids rise above that and some kids don't. And each individual, we can't blame all of our problems on public education. But there's a secondary thing that we lose with public education, and that is the parents lose being a part of the patience required to raise your kids. So anyway, we're going to have this symposium. Everybody on the network has already been informed. People that we're looking for volunteers, people who have something to share and to say and have some sort of competency in this, to put them on the symposium. And we'll do maybe a series of hour-long calls, and we'll edit them out and make them available on our website. We have a lot of changes coming up on some of our websites. We have quite a few websites. HisHolyChurch.org, PreparingYou.com. We're actually going to revamp probably Preparing University and set that up. And that's a wiki site that is created by the people, for the people, and of the people to help the people learn what it is to and the responsibilities required to live in a free society. Because most people don't know that now. Most of the people, as we talked about in the two earlier shows today, are suffering from national psychosis. Now, everybody has some personal psychosis, but national psychosis is getting to be a real problem. And it's getting really out of hand. And most people don't even understand what national psychosis is, what this national psychosis is. And it's definable in terms. And we can go over some of those terms and some of those specs of national psychosis. And, of course, we can go back to I've been reviewing this pretty regularly for those of you who listen regularly to our broadcasts on other stations as well. Psychosis is not, you know, we use the word psychosis or we say somebody is psychotic. And we think, well, he's crazy. Well, all psychosis is a mental disorder or dysphoria, or where your mind and your emotions are impaired to some degree or another. And this is true with a lot of people, but it's impaired enough that they lose their ability to determine external reality. Now, there's obviously huge amounts of degrees in this, but you got half the people in the country voting for one candidate. You got half the people voting for another candidate. Only one, the candidates are so different that only one of them could be right, if any. And so at least half the people are suffering from some sort of psychosis because they can't determine the external reality of who is the better candidate for president. And I'm not going to say, you know, I'm not political, so I'm not going to advise you into which one. I don't really think it will make that much difference. I don't really think they're all that different. But the reality is the fact that you think that voting is going to make a difference is sign in itself that there is a certain amount of psychosis involved. Now, that doesn't mean not to vote. You can certainly try, but, you know, I've been watching people vote for over half a century, and it really hasn't made much difference. Government grew under Reagan. You know, he's well-intentioned, but the reality is if you think by choosing a different president, you're going to change the course of the entire nation, not going to happen. The nation is driven by the minds and hearts of the people. And changing the president does not change the minds and hearts of the people. It may be a bully pulpit, but it's only a pulpit. And maybe they'll stop a few things here and there, but then there's the next go-around and something else will change it. And this, you know, way back in, like I say, in the 1960s, Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas, was saying, regardless of who gets elected president or to office, a governor or senate or Congress, it's the vast bureaucracy that is actually running things. And Bill Clinton said, when you get to this position, somebody else is calling all the shots. I mean, he admitted this openly. And so the idea that you're going to pick somebody that is actually going to make a difference. If somebody is actually possibly going to make some difference in the course of this nation and they run for office, they will be blackballed, they will be censured, they will be stopped. They're just not going to be allowed to continue. And if they get into office and then suddenly decide to change the course of the nation, they're liable to be shot and killed. So, you know, what really is going to change things? Well, I would love to be able to give you a magic wand and just wave your hands and then you can go out there and you can just say, okay, from now on, we're all going to be different. But it doesn't work that way. you have to change. And that's the one person you can and have a right to change is you. And you're going to need help changing because you're not self-creating. So you're going to need to be attached to something, connect to something, participate in something that helps you change. And then when you change, you will actually facilitate the change of others. You can help others. It's kind of like, you know, you're out there in the rapids and you're being washed down the river and tossed to and fro and, you know, dunked under the water. And you're thinking like, well, you know, how do I stop? How do I save? And there's all kinds of other people in the water. You got to get to dry land. You got to grab a hold of a rock or something and then reach out and pull other people to shore. And then they reach out and pull other people to shore. And you have to get on firm footing. You can't save anybody until you get on firm footing. Right now, you're suffering from psychosis. And this is why I was teaching the meditation. We have a website up on that. I ought to do a recording that kind of helps you with what I call the meditation. There's lots of different kinds of meditation, and we talk about those. But there are some that are better than others. And there are drawbacks to every one of them, depending on how you use them. And there are good things about every one of them, depending on how you use them. It's just like a crime. What makes a thing a crime is intent. And what makes meditation useful is your intent. It's like I said, you could do exercises, push-ups, get real strong, prove your grip, exercise your grip, and then go out and strangle somebody with your improved muscular strength. So that really wasn't a good thing. All that exercise was a bad thing because it helped you do bad things. It's the same way with meditation. Your intent is going to make the difference. So what's your intent? Well, what was the intent of Christ? Seek ye first the kingdom of God, which is something in opposition to the kingdom of men. It's not the kingdom of men. It's the kingdom of God. It's where God is king. And you obey his will. Now, what God? There's lots of gods, many according to the Bible and New Testament. No, this is the God of creation, the God that gives life, the God that, you know, is a good life-producing God. Whatever that is, whoever that is, whatever you what label you want to put on him, it is a fruitful God that has allowed all the world around you to blossom with life. And allowed you to breathe and given you life and a planet on which to be alive. So that whatever God did that, whatever God stirs in creation to make that happen, that's the God of creation. We are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, right? And so now the exercise of those rights is the exercise of the responsibility, your duty to God and your fellow man. Because that's one thing God gave you, is a duty to your fellow man and to the world at large. Dress it and keep it. And in dressing and keeping it, you're not to covet your neighbor's goods. You're not to steal from your neighbor. You're not to murder your neighbor. You're not to bear false witness against your neighbor. These are kind of basic things. You know, the truth shall set you free. So what in the world would you be bearing false witness? Well, why would you be stealing or coveting your neighbor's goods or devising systems where you could take away from your neighbor? You wouldn't be doing that if you were following the ways of the Creator of life. You would be giving life. You would be, you know, like getting married and having children and maybe proving up some ground and making a garden fertile and growing more food than you need so you could share with others. Those are the kinds of things that you would be doing, fruitful things, blessing society with your presence. But if you're about accumulating things for yourself, where you care more about yourself than about your neighbor, then you're not following the spirit of the Creator. You're following another spirit, a selfish spirit. And whatever you do, it doesn't matter. Whatever you do, it's going to produce a different world. The ripples of your life are going to produce a different world. And that's what's happened. You and the society in which you live is a product of you and the society in which you live. You are creating yourself. And so we had a few people who were talking about, you know, like in one case, it was, you know, the local county government was requiring that somebody get a permit in order to own a dog. Well, you think, well, like, I have to have a permit to get a dog? Seems foreign to people who have maybe spent their life not trying to meddle in other people's lives. It seems like that's a bit meddling. I mean, if there's a squirrel living in the tree outside my house, do I have to get a permit to allow him to live in the tree outside my house? No, but if you get a dog, yeah, you have to get a permit in this particular city. Your children. There's people who want to regulate what your children do. They want to make sure they're vaccinated and they go to school and they do this and jump through this hoop. And you have to jump through these hoops. And you have to pay in for your neighbor's kid's school. You have to do it. If you don't do it, they take your house away and they throw you out on the street and they say you're a bad, bad person. Because you didn't want to pay for their education. You don't want to pay for your neighbor's abortion. You could be arrested for that because it's paid for by taxes most of the time. And so therefore you have to do it because they're going to tax you to make you pay. Even though you think it's murder, you don't want to be a part of it, but you don't have any choice. Why don't you have any choice? Because you didn't give your neighbor any choice. When you went to school, did you go to public school? Most people did. They sent their kids to public school. Did you know that there were people out there struggling, working extra jobs, maybe even having heart attacks, developing ulcers, trying to make enough money to pay their property tax so that you could have free education, so that you could have a fire department, so that you could have a police department, just so that you could be safe? They had to do that. And nobody cared, you know, yeah, they put in some safeguards, you know, like if you have this and that, they're trying. You know, there was a lady who had a home that was worth $240,000 and it was taken away from her because she owed $6 in taxes. She owed $6 in taxes because when her husband died, the house was paid for, but when her husband died, she didn't have any means of support. And she tried to pay all the bills and pay for her food and try to get a job and all this stuff. And eventually she began to support things and she got caught up, paid all her back taxes, except for $6. She thought they were all paid, but $6 was not paid. But it was a little overwhelming, all the stuff she had to do and learn. And so $6 went unpaid and the county sold her house. And the guy who bought it would sell it back if she paid him all the money that she paid. But if she's going to pay him, she's not just going to pay the taxes. She's not just going to pay the $6. She has to pay him like $100,000 or $160,000, whatever it was, in order to get her house back that was already owned by her, but lost because she owed $6 in taxes. It took her years and legal fees and all kinds of trouble to finally get all that straightened out. And she finally did. But why did this widow lady have to fight that? It's because you're an amoral society. As a society, you are amoral. You don't care about your neighbors. Well, all the people that worked in government could see very clearly this is not fair. All the people in the county, all the people going to church in that county should have said, wait a minute, this is not right. We do not want to take this house away from this lady because of $6. Oh, no, we have to do it because, you know, she was in arrears and the rule says that if you're in arrears, da, 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 da. No moral, they're amoral. They don't base anything on any common sense moral belief or understanding. They're not fit for the kingdom of heaven. They're not only backbiters, they'll steal a widow's house because she failed to come up with $6. And then sell it for $160,000 to a guy knowing it's worth $240,000. And he won't give her the house back because the county won't give him the $160,000 back. And so she's supposed to move out because her husband died. She's a widow. Why in the world would that ever happen in America? Happens in America. That and probably worse. As a matter of fact, I can name you other cases that are worse. Well, they not only took her land and her house and her means of support, they took her kids away from her. because her husband died of cancer. And she had no, she was really almost suffering a mental breakdown. And they sold her house. Why did they do it? Why didn't the neighbors come and just pay the taxes for her? Well, it's not their business. They're too busy going to church. They're too busy telling everybody they're saved because they believe in Jesus. Whole county full of people, and nobody came to her aid. Nobody. Actually, there were a few people who tried to once they found out about it. But, and there is some blame on her part. Why wasn't she in a church that was, you know, I mean, they were homeschooling. They were trying to do things on their own. But they weren't coming together with anybody else. They were trying to fix their own position. They didn't care about others as much as they cared about themselves. Yeah, they didn't. They weren't coveting their neighbor's goods, and they weren't trying to get benefits out of their neighbor through men who exercise authority one over the other. But they weren't coming together to form that free assembly that we see the early church was. Of course, they didn't know how it worked. That's why we had to write the book, Thy Kingdom Come, so that you would begin to see how the kingdom works. The kingdom was at a hand. It was for the living. It was people who came together. Now, if they'd come together just with 9 other people in their community, they would have been able to stop the county from doing what they were doing. And there were actually people in the county that wanted this property because it was actually worth, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, 40 acres on a lake where they surrounded most of the lake themselves. And it was all pristine forest and everything. But, I mean, he built the home himself. The father did when he was well. But then he got sick. To tell you the truth, if they were in our network, we probably could have showed him a way that he could have got well. We could have sent people to their house to help them. We could have made sure that their property taxes were paid so that they did not lose the house. And we could have helped them raise their surviving children. She had little or no help because they didn't get together in a network. They thought they could do it all themselves. When he was healthy, they were doing pretty good. When they got sick, it wasn't so good. You see, that's what that comes of this. That's how this works. That's what the king, seeking the kingdom of heaven. You don't seek the kingdom of heaven just for you. If you're doing that, Christ is not in you. You seek the kingdom of heaven for others, which is why you need to form congregations of record. Why congregations of record? I mean, assemblies of testimony. You can call it assemblies of testimony. And what is the testimony? That you love one another. That you work to care about one another. That you are there to help one another. You haven't been doing that for years. So, you know, you should be under tribute. You should have your house being threatened to take away from you if you don't pay in those taxes. That you should suffer that. Because you sent your kids to public school. Your parents sent you to public school. You probably didn't support your parents. They depended on Social Security, which has been bankrupt for decades. Totally bankrupt for decades. But you still want those benefits. I forgive them. I don't want the benefits. I paid in for years and years. I don't want the benefits because I know I can't get one dime of benefits without taxing my children and your children. Without putting a burden of an interest-bearing debt upon your children and my children. Because there is no money in the system. None. Zero. Nada. Squat. Been bankrupt for years. Ruled by the Supreme Court year after year after year that there is no division of funds. The government's bankrupt, so Social Security is bankrupt. So how can I take from that without taking from... Now, I could bear false witness and say, oh, well, I paid in and I should get it. That would be my psychosis because I'm not in touch with the external reality that it's bankrupt. I want to believe that I can take from my neighbor and it's okay. So you have to get over your psychosis. Now, there's two things that you never do with a psychotic, according to, you know, professionals. One is you do not feed the psychosis. You don't want to feed the psychosis, the deception, the delusion. You don't want to feed it. And the other thing is you don't want to attack it directly. Because they identify with their psychosis. You know, when you see somebody, "I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America." They're pledging allegiance to a flag, to a flag, an inanimate object. "I'm pledging allegiance to a flag and to the republic for which it stands." So now that's two things. But you actually say you're pledging allegiance to the flag. Isn't that idol worship? I mean, just from a grammatical point of view, you're pledging allegiance to an inanimate object. You know, what is that? That's crazy. If you don't think that's idolatry. But you probably don't. And so maybe we can go on from there. But the reality is we do all these things and we never stop to think about them. To wonder about them. But we actually, if you listen closely, people will tell you what the problem is. They won't know they're telling you. But they will tell you what the problem is. But you have to listen closely. In order to listen closely, you have to be still yourself. Because see, you're caught up in the rapids, in the tumult of the same river that is swallowing them up and drowning them one by one down this torrential canyon of thoughts and emotions. And of course, when they start going to war and you hear the war cries and all this stuff, that's why what elections are all about, to get everybody worked up, more agitation, more white water ahead where you see all this tumult. Well, you're going to see a lot of white water in the days ahead. But the reality is, if you want to be separated out of that foaming mass of chaos, that emotional, mental chaos that is keeping you from seeing the external reality. And we talked in the previous two shows about some of the things that people just don't see that are just a matter of fact. You know, they don't see it. That you're in bondage worse than that of Egypt. And people don't want to see it. They don't want to think of that way. They want to have somebody tell them that they're saved and that everything will be okay and pat them on the head. But no, it's not. It's not going to be okay. You're not saved. You're actually workers of iniquity. You're coveting your neighbor's goods. You're taking from your neighbor. You're empowering people to exercise authority one over the other. And you're doing it for greedy purposes, to obtain gain at the expense of others. You have consented. You have come with us and consent that we all have one purse and lurk privately to make gain, secretly, subtly, to make gain. That's what you've done. So it's going to bring you to destruction. So how do we get back? How do we get released? How do we rise above this? That's what we're going to talk about when we come back. We're going to take a brief break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the actual psychological, mental, and emotional mechanics of getting out of the foaming, torrential, cascading river that we're caught up in that is headed for destruction. Anyway, we'll talk about that when we come back after this brief break. So welcome back. So how do we get out of this mess? How did we get into this mess? Because the bondage of Egypt, 20% of everything you produced during a given year was given into the Pharaoh. You had to work 20% of the time. One-fifth of your labor belonged to the Pharaoh. He got to collect that, and if you didn't pay it in, you know, he might put you into forced work camps or whatever. But everybody pretty much went along with it. They worked for the Pharaoh. And there was a complex way of doing this. You could actually pay in some sort of credits or money. You could send a servant to work in your stead, but then you would have to pay that servant. And you could do a lot of things to, but basically it was 20% income tax. And it couldn't be higher than that. And for thousands of years in Egypt, it wasn't higher than that. Hundreds of years for the Israelites. But through crafts of state, they actually increased that burden because you would have to, you would owe a tax on every child that you produced. If you, once you registered that child, then you were responsible for another 20 days of labor. And people think, well, you know, you can't get 20 days of, I mean, 20% of labor out of a child. But that's, it became like a head tax. And the reality is that even up until the time of Lincoln actually defended cases when he was a lawyer where a family was being charged for every member of the family that lived in a dwelling, and they had to contribute a portion of their labor to the landlord in order to stay living there, because that's how they paid their rent, was with laboring for the landlord. And so he actually argued that the child was doing its share, and they said, well, what's the child doing? And it was milking, according to him, which because it was still nursing on its mother. And it got a chuckle in that particular jury in court, and I guess he won that case. But the reality is that in Egypt, it was a lot more serious, that there was actually a head tax of every child born as soon as that child was registered, and that registration was considered death. As soon as you were registered, you were considered dead. And that's actually part of tradition in many societies, because you no longer had a life of your own. At least a portion of your life would have to be serving the gods of Egypt, you know, the rulers of Egypt, the judges of Egypt. And so some people were not registering their children, and that's what the midwives were up to, is to make sure that the people registered their children. And that was actually going on again at the time of Herod the Great. And some people were not registering their children, they were not registering themselves, and they were living separate from society. They were unregistered, or idiotes, as they would say in the Greek. And some of the apostles were idiotes, and of course, Christ called them all out eventually. Some were registered. Matthew was registered. Peter was not. Anyway, that's another whole story. The point is, what really brought them into bondage was the spirit of sloth, avarice, lasciviousness, wantonness, greed. Those spirits dwelling in them, conducting and controlling their actions, drew them into a status of subjection. It was the greed and jealousy of the brothers of Joseph that caused them to sell into bondage the very person who could have prepared them for the famine. They sold them into bondage, him into bondage, so that they themselves ended up going into bondage because of that, because of their envy and jealousy. That spirit is what was the driving force in that family that almost brought it to total destruction. So what is bringing the world today into total destruction? That same greed, jealousy, avarice, wantonness, lasciviousness, that lust for I want, even at the expense of my neighbor. And so in spiritual realms, which is the, you know, we believe in intelligent design. That design is going on right now. You were originally made in the image of God, but you have been remade in the image of the gods of the world. You have become greedy, lazy, selfish. Now, you may not be totally lazy. I understand a lot of you work really hard. But did you educate your children? Did you take care of your parents? Or did you do no more aught for your parents because they could collect a Social Security check? Or let's just say you did less for your parents because they could collect a Social Security check. Now, I will admit many people try to help out and all that stuff, but you're really not carrying all your weight. If somebody else is carrying part of it, especially benefactors who exercise authority, then you're going under the bondage that that always creates. So now if you want out of that bondage, now everybody, I can give you a list of all kinds of guys. You just file this paper and file that paper and you change your status and all this kind of stuff. That's all Huey. That's all lies. That's all false representation and bearing false witness, because it doesn't work that way. Because you're in bondage because of spiritual choices you made, your parents made, and your parents before you. I mean, everybody in Israel at the time of Moses was in bondage because of decisions made 400 years earlier. When they began to repent and change and start taking care of one another in a daily ministration, they were prepared for the oncoming famines and dearths in the land. Not only that, it opened a door where God would hear their cries because they began to care about one another. Now, it's amazing how this works, is that as soon as you actually start gathering for the purposes of Christ, the purposes of Jesus, which is Christ, the anointing of the thinking of Jesus, the emotions of Jesus, the ways of Jesus. As soon as you start gathering for that purpose, you will find your feet on firm ground. And you will be raised up so that you can see things that you could not see before. You will begin to see more clearly things that you could not see before. As soon as you do that, as soon as you turn around and start thinking, I have to care about others and not just myself. I have to care about other families and not just myself. I'm going to gather with other families. They may not be perfect. Some of them may have a short temper. Some of them may be lazy. Some of them may be selfish. Or maybe they're just some of these things some of the time. So they're not always consistent. You know, they're still tossed to and fro a bit. But you're going to actually gather for the purpose of helping save them. Not save yourself, but save them. Something mysteriously, quantumly, takes place in your reality, in the reality around you, that allows a new energy to come in. And with that new energy comes new insight. And sometimes new ability. They talk about in the Bible a diadem, given this kind of diadem crown. What are they talking about? What is this diadem? This crown, this new crown that you will be given. That's this, you know, I shall write my laws upon your hearts and upon your mind. And so what's he talking about? Writing his laws upon your heart and upon your mind. Well, he's going to change you, but you have to be willing to let yourself be changed. If you won't let yourself be changed, then what are you going to do? I mean, how are you going to do something different? Exercise a different path. Walk a different path. So you have to realize that the problem has been you. It's been you right along. And now here's a secret, which is going to be really important to grasp, that most people miss. Is that if people come to you, now they may unjustly tax you, pressure you, take from you, desire to take from you, manipulate you. They may do this unjustly, and there's going to be a lot of injustice around in relationship to what people actually do to you. But it may not be just injustice in the universe, because You may have done it to others through the agency of government. You may have, you know, like bombed Iraq back to the Stone Age or Afghanistan back to the Stone Age, looking for weapons of mass destruction that did not exist and that men knew didn't exist, but actually just simply wanted more war to stimulate the economy and to gain more control and power and authority. Now, that meant, I mean, like, why were we in Vietnam? Like I've said before, I've talked to high up people in government who were there standing with Eisenhower when it was decided to have a series of brush wars in Southeast Asia for the purpose of getting rid of communism? No. For the purpose of making America safe? No. For the purpose of stimulating the coal and steel industry, which would in turn stimulate the economy. That's why we were in Vietnam. That's why those 45, 50,000 people died in Vietnam on the American side, and millions died on the other side, is to stimulate business. That's mostly why you go to war, stimulate business. There are other secondary reasons. Sometimes you're being attacked. You know, you're being invaded. But somebody's starting the war to make a buck. You can bet your bottom dollar that there's somebody pressing the issue of going to war to make a buck. There's a spirit of selfishness that drives these. This is what gives current to current events. This is what gives flow to this tossing to and fro that society is always suffering. Into war, out of war, into war, back again. And what happens is that, you know, have you ever just watched a barroom fight where somebody pushes somebody, they insult them, and then they maybe nudge them or they give them a dirty look, and then they nudge them, and then they push them, and then they back and forth, and it starts up. When you act and somebody reacts with anger or resentment, it's like little strings crossing the quantum from your heart to that heart. And with those strings, there are little hooks, and they hook into you, and they bind you together. Forgiveness is the cutting of those strings, letting go. That's what frees you. Forgiveness frees you. But then how do you know you've forgiven? So you don't know you've forgiven unless you can give to those and bless those who have hurt you. And this is why Christ is telling you, he's not just trying to create a, you know, employee-friendly environment when he says, bless those who spitefully use you. He's telling you how to free yourself from them, how to become free from them. Now, becoming free from them is one thing. Now you have to test that liberty. And where you build a wall between you and them, and that is you bless them. You not only forgive them, but you bless those that you needed to forgive. You give back to them. And one place to start that is when they tax you, pay the tax. Quit whining about it. Pay the tax. Pay it with love. You know, go down and give them the coin and embrace them and say, I give this to you freely. I don't do it because you threaten me, because you want to rule over me or want to rule over my household. I give it to you friendly. You wanted it, I give it to you friendly, freely, in friendship and in love. And I pray that it blesses you. I give you this money with all the love in my heart for you. I know you need to repent, and I pray that you do, of your wicked ways. But I give you this coin in love, or this money, or this check, or whatever it is. I tell you, you change the course of history yet to be when you do this, if you can really do it. And it's a test as to whether you can do it, because you can't do it facetiously. You have to really do it. And then you go out and you want to serve others, serve your neighbor. You want to show them, even though that they spitefully did things to you, you want to do righteous to them. You want to do good things for them. You want to bless them. We've been cursing one another for centuries. We are in the midst of a zombie apocalypse where we take a bite out of one another. And in the name of, well, we need schools. Oh, well, we need a fire department. Fire department is a good thing. We need that. So let's just take a bite out of our neighbor so that we can pay for it. That is drawing us closer to the ways of hell, where others will come and take a bite out of us. If you want to draw near the kingdom of heaven, you have to sacrifice. That's what the word Corban. You have to sacrifice for others. If your church does not have a daily ministration, working, striving daily to become the entire social welfare of your congregation, you're not following Christ. You're not keeping his commandments. And you should be in servitude. You should be in bondage. You should be under tribute. Because you haven't yet repented. You have need of repentance. This is the way it works in this world and the next. Now, if you continue to go down the road you've been going, then you are being washed into the abyss. And down there, the entities that dwell there bite one another, devour one another, consume one another, control one another, take from one another. So which realm are you going to be drawn to? What realm? I tell you, as soon as you begin to turn around, the Father begins to prepare to run out and meet you. Spiritually, in this realm, angels will come, I don't want to get into angels too much, but the Spirit of God will come and defend and protect and give you covering. But you must really make that commitment. You haven't done it yet because you haven't seen the truth about yourself. You may have started, or you wouldn't even be listening to this program this far. But anyway, we're going over our time a little bit, but we started a little bit late, and this is important. Join the network. Go to preparingyou.com, preparingyou.com. Join the network. Gather in congregations, start filling in the gaps, turning on the light in 1,000 different places, 10,000 different places throughout the land, and do it for love of others. Not to save yourself, but to save others, because time is running out. But until then, may peace be upon your house, and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.